The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks.
Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day! And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Wednesday in Sin City. My voice is cracking, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined, as always, by my friend and colleague, the Professor, Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, we're going to show you the best way to deal with a 7-10 split, how dollars and cents will sometimes overcome common sense in coaching hires, leaving bad sense for the fans to have to breathe in. Try to work sense three different ways into one sentence. Not too bad. And when we get to money time tonight, can Cincinnati possibly have the right stuff with their depleted basketball roster?
It doesn't make any sense what you're trying to say there, Dave, and patting yourself on the back, but bottom line, Tuesday night, did you enjoy yourself last night? What do you have for your first take?
You were going to try to get sense in more than once.
I was.
Yeah, you just died the first.
I gave up.
And three different versions of the word in one sentence.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a bad sense sitting next to you. Is that appropriate?
It could be. Get used to it, because we've had to deal with it from the other side. Our first take is one that, you know, we owe an apology for. We got bagged yesterday. Arnett Moultrie, one of the keys to our handicap for Mississippi State in their game against Florida, didn't play last night. We didn't have that. We honestly didn't. And we found out that a lot of people didn't either. In fact, one of the more popular line services sent out their alert that Moultrie was out 7 minutes after the game had started, which is kind of nice timing on their part. We got bagged on that one. And that's the thing we don't like. A lot of times you're going to have a good idea and still lose a bet. But to not get the information right, and that's one of our conundrums at this time of the year with schools like Mississippi State. The local Starkville paper, you're not going to get a preview of the game out of them. They'll cover football a little bit more. The student paper, not publishing this week, final exams. So usually we have to go to the Jackson Clarion Ledger for the best info we can get out of Mississippi State. But even now, they don't cover basketball, especially a non-conference game, quite as much as they will at other times. So we blew it yesterday. We'll try our best not to in the future, but that's one is bad on us. Teddy, your voice is cracked. That means it must have been a tough night.
Tough night? You know, last night, I swear, it sucks getting older. I don't know if I'm a geezer, I'm an old fogey. I'm a guy, I probably spent at least 15 years where there wasn't a night that I fell asleep before 2 o'clock in the morning. I mean, it just didn't happen. You know, I worked in the restaurant bar business, I came out to Vegas, and I certainly wasn't one of these guys that would rise at the crack of dawn when I first came out here. So last night, I ended up watching the Mississippi State game, ended up watching the Drexel game online earlier, where I was able to, get my basketball fix in, did my work for today's card. And I'm like, all right, Carol, let's have a little date night. Let's rent a movie. We'll sit on the couch. I even talked her into the movie that I wanted to watch. It was like she wanted to watch
date
The
night?
Help.
No. Date night?
Oh, I love it when I can get
That's sweet. That's real. Date night, that's really sweet.
Well, we do that, you know, once a week I get caught doing date night. You know, there's not really any way,
Okay, there goes all the sweetness right
out. Exactly. Well, you got to do it. I mean, it's the bottom line is, in this business, we work a lot of nights. We work a lot of weekends. Once a week, I have to pay attention to Kara. I like paying attention to Kara at least once a week. You know, Isaac's down. Let's rent a movie. You know, all right. So I even talk her into the movie I want to rent. I get to watch The Debt instead of The Help. You know how much of that movie I saw last night, Dave? I think I might have stayed awake through the opening credits. I don't remember anything. I didn't see any of that movie. Crashed out less than 10 minutes in. Didn't see a minute of it. It sucks getting old. Stay young as long as you can. You know, it's brutal. Anyhow, let's go to Market Watch today, and I want to start with a letter. We're going to do a letter right off the get-go today. Those emails keep pouring in, and this is a good one. I think that one that definitely deserves some Market Watch discussion today. Here's a letter from three kids who sent this in yesterday, or an emailer identifying him or herself as three kids. Hi, guys. How about a segment on the advantages slash disadvantages of different betting options? Parlays, teasers, if wins, etc. Dave, why don't you start?
Yeah, we've dealt with this a couple of times before in the regular letter section. The reason we brought it up is because we had some other letters coming in asking about dealing with bowl time situations and how you tie those different things into play. And we understand where most of you are coming from. Every Saturday, here's your college football board. You play them, you parlay them together, you find your teasers, but now that board's spread out. First kickoff in Albuquerque coming up on Saturday, LSU and Alabama, that seems like light years away. So people have talked about bowl strategies. One of the things we wish we could do for you, but the limitations just don't allow it time-wise, is to run through the whole board right now, because we know a lot of you want to be able to get some of your parlays in. You want to take a game this Saturday, parlay it to a game on New Year's Eve, maybe then parlay it to the Alabama game. So let's talk about some of these strategies. First, you can search out some places that will allow open parlays and open teasers. They're not easy to find. If you can, that's an excellent way to deal with this. Suppose you really like Temple against Wyoming. You also like Iowa against Oklahoma. And you like Pitt against SMU. Well, you might not want to necessarily lock them all in right now, because now that parlay is extending for a long time. But get your first leg in and then leave it open where you can add accordingly and have line moves be available for you. So that's one of the things you'll talk about. But the first strategy of all, go through your bowl card and sort of figure out in your head where you think you're going to be going and spread the money out a little bit in your head. Even if you're not going to bet Alabama LSU now, if you know you want to bet Alabama LSU and you want to bet it big, don't blow chump change on games you don't like that much when you've got bigger bets ahead. So try to get an overall strategy in place from a money management standpoint right now.
I'm going to talk about teasers here for a minute, because I know we get a lot of questions about teasers, and I promised on an earlier show that I would do a full breakdown of the, Teddy Covers teaser strategy. It's not my strategy. I stole it from other sharp handicappers. But really, it's very, very simple. When we talk about advantage play, we talk about positive expectation wagers. There's one kind of teaser that provides that opportunity, and that, of course, we're talking about 6-point teasers in the NFL, where you can lay, in the best case scenario, you can lay 11 to 10 on those wagers. But, you know, what 6-point NFL teasers. Okay, the concept is this. You want to tease favorites of bigger than a touchdown down to below a field goal. So you're taking a favorite of 7.5 or 8.5 points, teasing them down so that they're a short favorite. If they win by a field goal, they cover the number. Similarly, you want to tease small underdogs of less than a field goal, 2.5-point dog, 1-point dog, 1.5-point dog, right in that range, tease them up above a touchdown. So you're taking big favorites and teasing them down. You're taking small dogs and teasing them up. And that strategy, very simple, is positive expectation strategy for betting teaser in the NFL. I won't touch a teaser in college hoops. I won't touch a teaser in the NBA. I won't touch a teaser in college football. Remember, the lower the total, the more those extra points are worth. So in the NFL, it makes a lot of sense. You have your totals ranging between 35 and 50, which is a good 10, 12 points lower than you're going to see on average in the college ranks, let alone in the NBA or college hoops. So you get the maximum value with your points in teasers in games where the total is the lowest. And that's a two-minute primer on teasers, not even.
Now, of course, here comes the downside, as always happens in these sharp betting markets. The best sports book in the world, or the one who does the most handle right now, pretty much aware of this, and we can't refer to it directly, but just say that this place is just a pinnacle of the industry. But one of the things you'll never see on their NFL board, a 2-point line or an 8-point line. And there's a reason for that. They take that teaser category out of play. So a lot of times you'll see a lot of books will have a game at 7.5, they'll have the game at 9, using money off of that 9, sort of the money line equivalent. They take that teaser out. A few other books have sort of followed the same model. That's the problem in the marketplace, is when you have something good across general territories, it gets figured out pretty quickly. What Teddy said is absolutely right. Those are the teasers you do look for, and the flip side of that is ignore all others. Any other they're laying 14, I can tease it down to 8. Forget it, don't do it. What you're buying, that 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 isn't worth the risk factor for that bet. So ignore everything else. Look for those situations he told you when you can find them. The difficulty is a lot of books are going to make you lay 6 to 5 on those. It's not as easy as it used to be.
Sure. And if wins. You asked a question about if win bets, and those are bets that are nice to book, not always great bets to make. There is one instance where if win bets make sense, and really that's week 17 in the NFL, where if team A wins, then team B is going to rest starters, and if team B rests starters, then team C is going to show up. And you can find those opportunities in week 17 of the NFL. That's the only time in any sport, maybe the last day of the season in the NBA has some, but usually even that doesn't have a lot of the same type of opportunities. The problem, of course, is that, again, the books are well aware of this, and you'll have to look long and hard to find a sports book that will allow you to make those if-win bets in week 17 of the NFL, and that's literally the one time a year where you might want to use that particular type of wager.
Yeah, the only other time you want to think about the if-win bets, and we see some books that will allow this, is if you just want to make sure you can get into play on a game. And it's a difficulty on Sunday, let's say using the Vegas starting times, the 1:05 NFL games, because a lot of times you're not going to have a first kickoff turned around in time. Some will take it. If I have New England at 10 and it wins, give me the Jets at 1:05. If they see there's no correlation, that New England's game doesn't have any impact on the Jet game, they'll take that. That's just a way to make sure that you can get your bet in case one game runs long.
That's a great question, Three Kids. Thanks for sending it in. And it gives us a great opportunity to discuss some of these issues at the outset of today's show. But for right now, we got to keep those questions coming. We've had great emails all week long. SportsDay@covers.com. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter at Vegas Sports Day, and you can get involved in the covers.com community. Active threads and discussions going right now. covers.com/postingforum. Now, when we come back, you knew it was going to be fun in Columbus, didn't you?
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
Let me know when I'm live. Hi, everybody. This is Bridget Magnus of Getting Real Estate in Vegas, and you are watching the Vegas Video Network.
Okay, guys, time to scrub up. We're going to take you into the postmortem, take you deep inside the game to show you some things you should have seen, but probably didn't.
Josh Freeman and Tampa Bay appear to be on the way to something pretty special after last year's breakthrough season, in which they went 10-6, keyed by Freeman's ability to lead the team back from deficits with late rallies. Fast forward to today, that 10-6 seems a long, long time ago now. 4-9 in the standings for the Bucks this year. All of a sudden, Raheem Morris, who was one of the bright up-and-coming coaches, is now on the hot seat. And Freeman has gone from a 95.9 passer rating last year, number 6 in the NFL, down to 72.5 passer rating this year, number 27 amongst the 32. I guess there's more than 32 starting quarterbacks, but you get my point. That's one of the bigger single-season drops you'll ever see at the NFL level. Last year, 25 touchdowns to 6 interceptions. This year, 12 touchdowns to 18 interceptions. Yuck, those are not good numbers. Was 2010 some kind of a fluke? And is this the real Josh Freeman? How can a guy fall so far so fast, Dave?
His team stinks. And they really do. Okay, so you're going to be at a lot of Christmas parties or New Year's parties in the next couple of weeks. You want to win a bar bet? And certainly at least hold up through this week's game. But you know what? I don't think the Colts have been the worst team in the NFL in terms of riding time. There's somebody else that's been out there who's actually trailed more than the Colts. Now, come on, the Colts are winless. There can't be. Well, Tampa Bay's been behind for 507 minutes and 27 seconds this year. That's more than the Colts. Even though the Colts have not won a game, Tampa has trailed on the scoreboard longer. 6 times in the last 7 weeks, they've trailed by 13 or more as early as the third quarter. It's a bad football team. Last year, they patched it close enough in some of these games that Freeman was able to lead some dramatic rallies. The problem this year, he's having to lead rallies from way behind. Now, part of the reason why they've been falling behind is he has not had as good a year as he had last year. But he hasn't been quite that bad. Here's what you need to remember about Josh Freeman. He's 23 years old. He's still the youngest starting quarterback in the NFL. Younger than Andy Dalton, younger than Tim Tebow. So let's do a little comparison. Freeman at 23. How was Aaron Rodgers at 23? We don't know. Hadn't started a game. How was Tom Brady at 23? No, we don't know. He hadn't started a game. Drew Brees, another guy who's a pretty good quarterback. The age of 23, his passer rating was 76.9. At the age of 24, Drew Brees' passer rating, 67.5. Josh Freeman may be fine for the age of 23. He's getting valuable experience at a much earlier stage in his career than a lot of very good quarterbacks that are out there. We think he's going to be fine, and you know what? So does his offensive coordinator, Greg Olsen. Let's use this quote from Olsen to wrap it up well. I have no doubts about Josh. None. Moving forward as a franchise, he will play better, and we will do a better job of surrounding him with players. Are we getting the separation we got a year ago? I don't think we are. Yeah, Freeman has not been as good as he was last year, but it's the team around him that's really had their struggles. Over the next couple of weeks, we're going to put our scalpels to a lot of the college coaching situations, particularly as they impact bowl games. So naturally, Ohio State becomes one of the prime ones. What a magical matchup. Urban Meyer, now the Ohio State coach, obviously maybe helping Luke Fickell a little bit, game planning for Florida, a team that he knows real well, and he's allowed to now because Luke Fickell has been hired as next year's defensive coordinator. Co-defensive coordinator, we don't know yet that yet. The exact quote from Meyer, it might be co, it might not. Why could he be co-defensive coordinator? Because Everett Withers, the interim coach at North Carolina, is likely on his way to Columbus. Already announced on his way to Columbus, Jim Herman, the Iowa State offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach. Urban Meyer is being pretty busy, you know, isn't he? And doesn't it seem a little bit odd? Because Ohio State season isn't over yet. Luke Fickell is their head coach. They still have a bowl game yet to play. So why is Ohio State out there so active when we see similar situations where it doesn't happen?
Yeah, that's a good question. Why? Because the NCAA is a bunch of freaking morons. I mean, there's no more to it than that. Yeah, Ohio State applied to the NCAA for the rights to have two concurrent coaching staffs. A nice little reward for a program that has been dealing with some, well, what should we say, awkward issues over the last 12 months. One that certainly is ruffling the feathers of their Big Ten competitors. So instead of Fickell having to remain the head man throughout the bowl versus Florida and then a very awkward recruiting cycle, instead, Meyer is allowed to be out there full-time recruiting right now, building his staff, while Fickell game planning for the game against the Gators. And the NCAA, their quote, there were, quote, extenuating circumstances surrounding the changes in the coaching personnel and the timing of the bowl game. So the Big Ten competitors like Michigan, Michigan State, Iowa, Wisconsin, they all have coaches that are forced to prepare for their bowl game and be out recruiting at the same time. Penn State doesn't even have a coach yet. They're even in worse shape. And so even before all these sanctions at Ohio State, the final word hasn't been handed down. What happens? The NCAA gives the Buckeyes a break. And boy, Meyer on the recruiting trail, he's already reeling them in. Tommy Shutt, the top-rated player in the state of Illinois, who had originally made a commitment to Penn State. Oh, guess what? He's going to be a Buckeye now. Savon Pittman, the number three player in the state of Ohio. He committed to Michigan State. He's going to go to Ohio State. The Meyer years ahead are going to be fun. They already are. But this, just another example of why the NCAA is run by a bunch of freaking clowns.
When we come back, we're going to calm Teddy down so he can read an email. It's a nice, calm, relaxed version of Vegas Sports Day.
This is David Ivey from Pub Crawl. It's funny because this is David from... You should just leave it on. Hi, I'm David Ivey from Pub Crawl, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And scene.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Before we go inside the numbers today, let's answer a question submitted in the Covers posting forum over the course of the last 24 hours. The question comes from Proline36, who says, I love the show, but can you explain when you guys make your picks why there is always a number before them? For example, a 2-star before Teddy's Mississippi play and a 6-star, the strongest play.
It's really a money management issue, and those stars have to deal with the strength of a given game. Not all games are the same. So you're going to want to bet a little bit more on your stronger, a little bit less on the weaker, obviously. Maybe sometimes you bet more based on a particular line value. One of the things that we always put out there, and we can be criticized for it because we don't know we're right. This is more art than science, is being a little bit conservative. You'll see a 4, 5, 6 type of rating scale so that the very strongest play you make is just a half a game more than an average play. We're comfortable with that. Other people say, no, you can step up a little bit more. We don't agree with it. We've just seen way too much over the years. So we'll be pretty conservative with it, but it refers to the strength of the play, because again, not all games are equal.
Yeah, and every handicapper takes a different approach to this. I take an approach that's very similar to Dave. I'll rank what I call a free play as a 2-star selection. My standard unit plays would be either a 3 or a 4-star, 4-star being slightly stronger than 3. And then what I call my big ticket plays, which are my strongest plays, would be a 5, 6, and the very occasional 7-star. But in general, you're talking there about percentage of bankroll you're looking to use on any given wager. But it's important as a service provider that when your clients get a play, it's not just some random play. You want to give them an idea of how it relates strength-wise to some of the other stuff you put out, both before and after any given release. So that's the basic strategy. It's just getting an idea of how strong any given play is and how much of your bankroll you want to tie up in that particular wager. All right, Dave, I think it's time to transition to Inside the Numbers, and we've got a doozy for today, don't we?
We got the mailbag thinned down enough where we can get a little Inside the Numbers segment in, and it's one that we had filed away that we thought perhaps was filed away for good. One of the things that Norv Turner has done right, even though he's had struggled early in seasons, is developing and building the San Diego offense to kind of a crescendo at the end of most seasons. Hasn't carried over into the playoffs just yet, but San Diego's just been dynamic down the stretch. But what have we seen the last 2 weeks? Some pretty good football. The best we've seen from Phillip Rivers all year. A couple of dominating wins that has the Chargers realizing they're still in the playoff race. So let's take a look at this now. When we go inside the numbers for Wednesday, let's break down Norv Turner late in the season. These are his regular season games from December 1st on since becoming the San Diego coach. How about a nice 19-2 straight up, 14-6-1 against the spread? That's a 70%. And what we like is inside of it, in those 21 games, 9 different games where they beat the spread by at least 14 points. That tells you it's not just the ball bouncing right for Turner late in the year. He legitimately makes good adjustments to have his team playing their best this time on the schedule.
When we come back, we're going to give you all the news you need to know in today's Insider Six Pack.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Okay, it's not yet noon here in Vegas. If you've ever been to Vegas, you know, if it's not yet noon, that means it's time to drink. Insider Six Pack, let's pop the top right now. We're going to start in the NBA with some Dallas and Denver talk right here. We're going to keep you up to date on the roster move frenzy as we approach the start of the regular season on Christmas Day. Yesterday, we talked a little bit about some of the moves that Dallas had made being much more active than we usually see for defending champions, and it continues. Rudy Fernandez, Corey Brewer have been dealt to Denver for a second-round draft pick. Note the long-term savvy of some of this. While Fernandez and Brewer, both quality contributors for the Mavs, Dallas, not only good enough to contend this season without them, but now they freed up as much as $20 million against next year's salary cap, which gives them an option to make more moves down the road this year or perhaps in this next offseason, in the 2012-13 free agent cycle. For Denver, Fernandez may well move right into the starting lineup here, depending on what happens to Aaron Aflalo, who's still a free agent at this time. And also, it's worth note something about him that we're going to be tracking with other players. He's in better basketball shape than most guys. He's been playing for Real Madrid throughout this past offseason. Meanwhile, Brewer adds some front court depth to a roster that's without Kenyon Martin, J.R. Smith, and Wilson Chandler, all of whom are playing in China right now and not likely to be released from their contracts early. None of those guys may join an NBA roster until as late as March. Nuggets also re-signed Nene for a five-year deal. He's going to be a Nugget for a long time, but they definitely need to add some depth in the low post behind him.
We get to money time tomorrow. We're going to talk about Lafayette and the big bowl game in New Orleans against San Diego State. That's turning out to be an awfully big game. The team bus left for New Orleans today. They've already sold over 30,000 tickets for this game, already setting a record. We say that because the team bus left for Oxford, Mississippi in a basketball game tonight, and they probably didn't even need a bus. They could have fit this group on a van. J.J. Thomas is not going to play. Scottie Farrington is not going to play. Kadeem Colby is with the team. Don't expect him to play. It's possible Lafayette may only dress 9 players out tonight. Flip side of the equation is where it gets interesting for Mississippi, and maybe the markets could be a little bit behind. We told you about these situations where kids become eligible and people who are married to the November statistics get trapped because they're not appreciating how much a team changes. Ladarius White, he joined Mississippi for the first time over the weekend. First time out of the box in 26 minutes, 16 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, a couple of block shots. Nice player to add. Now tonight, someone who not only brings something on the court, but there's a buzz factor. Jalon Kendrick will be the first McDonald's All-American ever to dress up in a Rebel uniform. He's a transfer from Memphis. So take those Ole Miss performances from November with a grain of salt. White, Kendrick, two big-time players entering that rotation now.
Let's talk about tonight's South Florida-Auburn basketball game. We've seen some money come in on South Florida over the course of the last hour or two. Driving the number down was up as high as 3, and now it's down to 2 with the Auburn Tigers favored at home. Auburn head coach Tony Barbie can only wish that he had Andy Kennedy's depth at Ole Miss. He suspended Tony Naismith. He suspended Josh Langford indefinitely back in early November. It's been a 7-player rotation on most nights for Auburn, and they were hoping for reinforcements tonight when transfer Noel Johnson becomes eligible. But Johnson's being bothered by a hand injury. He's a game-time decision. No sure thing to get into action this evening, and no sure thing to be effective if he does get into the rotation. And it's certainly worth noting, Auburn has not played in 11 days. And during this time with exams, teams that aren't in game shape and aren't in game flow, it's certainly worth noting when that happens, these extra long layoffs can keep teams out of their best basketball shape. And we're talking about an Auburn team that's only played 5 games all season. Here's a quote from Barbie, quote, "We are still nowhere where we need to be. One of the reasons is we haven't been healthy. You still don't have your full complement of players on the floor, so it's hard to get a gauge on what you truly have." Meanwhile, the South Florida edge of the equation, well, they've played twice as many games as Auburn have this year. They played twice since the Tigers last took the floor. And it's surely worth noting that in their last game, both Ron Anderson and Victor Rudd had to sit out with a strep throat. But both guys are practicing and expected to be in the projected starting lineup for tonight.
Problems for Auburn basketball? We're wondering if there might be some problems for Auburn football as well coming up. Last week we told you about defensive coordinator Ted Roof leaving for Central Florida. Well, now Gus Malzahn, who's flirted with a lot of different coaching jobs the last few years, is leaving also. Press conference coming up in Jonesboro, Arkansas later this afternoon. He'll be the new head coach at Arkansas State. Kind of a homecoming for Malzahn, who's an Arkansas guy born and raised. But look at the money. It's $850,000. He was making $1.3 million as the Auburn offensive coordinator, the highest paid offensive coordinator in the nation. He was offered more money to take the Vanderbilt jobs and the Maryland jobs last year, higher profile jobs to be their head coaches. So yeah, we can say maybe he wants to go back home. But now here's a little bit of the conundrum. One of the things we talked about on this show that most others didn't report in the whole Penn State and Jerry Sandusky fiasco is how Ed DeChellis, the head basketball coach, slipped out of town in the spring and went to Annapolis to coach Navy. You don't leave a Big Ten team and that paycheck to go coach Navy unless you think that something might be wrong. Well, now Ted Roof and Gus Malzahn both take pay cuts to go to lesser programs. Is that their way of telling us there are some storm signals out there and maybe some of this Cam Newton stuff hasn't gone away yet? Do we sense some dark clouds on the Auburn football horizons?
Down the road in Birmingham, there's also going to be a change at offense coordinator coming. Jim McElwain leaving Alabama to become the head coach at Colorado State. He's going to get $1.35 million to head to Fort Collins. Now, he may be a good fit for the Rams. Of course, we said the same thing about Steve Fairchild 4 years ago. But McElwain was born in Missoula, Montana. He played as quarterback at Eastern Washington. He began his coaching career at Eastern Washington, Montana State. So this northwest corner of the country is certainly an area that he is very familiar with and could have some success recruiting there. McElwain has already hit the ground running on that recruiting front, but he will return to Alabama next week and coach the offense in the championship game against LSU.
Reports coming out of the Twin Cities Pioneer Press that Leslie Frazier has been given a vote of confidence and will come back as the Minnesota Vikings head coach next year, which seems a bit odd. They've only gone 5-14 under Frazier, and they've been awful fundamentally, especially in close games. 1-7 in games decided by 7 points or less. So why do you get rewarded for that? Because the Vikings simply can't afford to fire him. They still owe money to Brad Childress as part of that $5 million buyout. When they had to get him out, they would owe a buyout to Frazier as well. Here's the conundrum going forward. Three NFL teams have already fired their coaches. You become number four. That means you get into a bidding war for the best available talent out there. If you're already having to pay off Childress and Frazier, you just don't have the money to get into a bidding war. Looks like they're going to try to patch it together and hold on for one more year. Again, this is not a bad football team. The fact that they've been in so many games that were decided by seven or less shows you they have some talent there. They're going to try to patch one more year. If Frazier doesn't get it done next year, then they'll be in a better financial position to go out and get a better coach.
Yeah, I think the Vikings have hope next year. And we've got hope for a real good Money Time segment on deck next.
No pressure. Hi, I'm Dennis Silvers from, can't think of the name on my damn show, Golf and Other Four-Letter Words, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network, I think.
You'll see it when it pops.
Okay, guys, it's money time! This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. Let's start with the, we're talking about Boise, Idaho, the New Mexico Bowl. No, we're talking about what, Potato Bowl here? Yeah, Ohio U and Utah State. Right now the Aggies, about a 2.5-point favorite, total 57 and a hook.
One of the early shows we did here was a postmortem on an absolutely amazing turnaround that Utah State had in an individual game at Hawaii, a time where Utah State was having a downtrodden season. Lost a couple of close games early they could have won, getting whipped badly at Hawaii, and right before halftime, Chucky Keaton, their quarterback, gets injured so badly they had to stabilize his neck, take him out on a cart. He wasn't even able to return back to campus with the team after the game, did return a little bit later, but has not come back to the team to play this year. But what a turnaround. Adam Kennedy takes over at quarterback. Not only do they rally to win that game, they win all their games the rest of the way to become bowl eligible. Tremendous story. Part of why they're a small favorite here is that appearance of momentum. Here's the flip side of that. Those five wins, some of them against really bad teams, by a combined total of 12 points in regulation play. They won a bunch of close calls against bad teams. So we'll talk a few times in the weeks ahead about the role of the virgin bowl favorite. Bad points spread record through the years, and a Virgin Bowl favorite means you're favored even though you have not been to a bowl game in the lifespan of your players. That would be in the previous 4 years. Well, it's been more than a decade since Utah State's been in a bowl. So, yeah, they have a little momentum, or do they? Were these just gut-out wins against bad teams? Are they really supposed to be the favorites here?
Well, you know, I watched Utah State play enough this year to see that team does have a will to win, and they do respond to adversity well. The problem is that they're not that good. You know, if you grade out the X's and O's here, Ohio probably is the more talented of the two teams. But situationally, maybe we're talking about Utah State as a Virgin Bowl favorite, but there are some pretty lousy situational issues here for Frank Solich's Bobcats as well. Of course, you know, it's a straight shot down I-84 from Logan to Boise, maybe about four and a half hours, depending on how fast you speed for the Ohio Bobcats. Not the same ease of getting to this particular bowl game. Now, Ohio's been to bowl games three times in the Frank Solich era. The problem, of course, is that the Bobcats 0-3 in those contests, straight up and against the spread, and they've lost to the spread in those games by a combined total of 47 points. Solich treated some of them like reward games, not let's go win these games. And last but not least, you know, I mean, Ohio, we broke it down on a postmortem on the show, leading 20-7 in the MAC championship game with the opportunity to go to a better bowl than this one. What, 9 minutes remaining in that contest? Couple of questionable play calls, a team that lost their way down the stretch, and next thing you know, boom, they lose the game to Northern Illinois, and they're going to Boise. Is this a spot where their fragile psyche comes into play, or is this a spot maybe where they, you know, vent some frustrations against a lesser foe? Well, we'll find that out on Saturday.
Yeah, we wanted to make the case going in that Solich and that bowl experience could make a difference against a team that doesn't have it. But no, as Teddy said, that bowl experience has not been very good. But look for a big following. You know, when Utah State hasn't been to a bowl in a long time, that following will be there. You might even be able to beat that 4.5 hours on 84. Because one thing I don't know about 84, but on 15, when you're heading through Utah, you have three 80-mile-an-hour zones. Experimental, I think they're the only ones in the U.S. right now. If you got them on 84, you can knock it out pretty good to get over there. Ohio fans coming to Boise the week before Christmas, not going to happen. And keep that in mind as you examine some of these bowl games. When you try to factor who's going to be there and who's not going to be there, we're going to talk about this tomorrow a lot with Lafayette. The week before Christmas, and then with New Year's coming up, the Ohio people just don't have the money to spend on this sort of a recreational trip to follow their game against an opponent that doesn't excite them and to a venue that... You know, Boise's a nice town. I like Boise. It's not a destination that you get on a plane for.
Oh, well, do you get on a plane to go to Cincinnati, Ohio? Because that's where we're going to go when we talk about tonight's matchup for the Bearcats at Wright State. Right now, Cincinnati, a 5-point chalk. And how about the total in this one, Dave? We're not going to see a total lower than this all year in college hoops. 109. If the losing team can get to 54, can't lose this game if you bet the over, but that's a big if when we talk about the shooting of what's expected to be the losing team tonight.
Yeah, one quick correction before the emails come in. It's in Dayton tonight. We know where Wright State is. We don't want you to say, geez, you guys put Wright State in the wrong place. Dayton also a town that's not bad, but not
guilty. Guilty, my bad.
Dayton's not a destination either. I'm surprised to see line movement here with money being bet on Cincinnati, partially because of the obvious issues they have coming in. We were going to do a postmortem on the Cincinnati-Xavier aftermath, but we figured we could use this game to set up instead. But how does anyone project the lineup that's going to be out there? Because Mick Cronin, as of this morning, doesn't know who his starters are going to be yet. So if the coach doesn't know who his starters are going to be, who has the confidence to go to the window and say, no, that line's cheap, we're going to bet it up a little bit? Okay, definitely out tonight for Cincinnati. Yancey Gates, Juwan Ginn, Chake Madobo, Octavio Ellis. Looks like 8 scholarship players will dress. Only 2 front court players out of those 8. Here's the quote from Cronin as he lays it out. The worst thing to do would be for us to try to reinvent ourselves in 72 hours. You've got to try to get organized, but at the same time, you can't confuse your guys. You've got to have your players in a mentality where they're comfortable and they're on the attack. So they may play loose, they may play aggressive. We don't know. Somebody out there with money thinks they do know.
Yeah, and of course, this game's going to be on TV, ESPN2, giving Wright State a rare national TV appearance. And I don't know how many more they're going to get. Wright State has had some very, very, very ugly offensive numbers so far this year. This is a team that made money for me in recent seasons, but no question that is a complete rebuilding mode for, I'm not going to call them a Horizon League powerhouse. They've been, you know, near the top of the same conference that sent Butler to the national championship game in each of the last 2 years. This year, they're near the bottom. The biggest issue so far has been shooting, and not just iffy shooting, not just questionable shooting. We're talking about a brick-laying festival for the Wright State Raiders so far this year. 5 times in 10 games, they've been held to 51 points or less. They're number 326 out of 338 Division I teams in points per game, and they're shooting 36% as a team. That's inside the arc, outside the arc. That includes layups and dunks. 36%, Dave? Not good shooting.
What's going to be bad when you watch them is they run good offensive stuff. They run good. I mean, they're unselfish. They run good stuff. They get guys wide open. They just can't shoot. So if they can't shoot, we're not going to shoot in that one. But we've got a shot that we will take tonight. It's play of the daytime. And let's fight back to an insider six-pack. We talked about Lafayette, their depleted depth chart going to Mississippi. Ole Miss right now is very deep. And the one thing Andy Kennedy has been saying a lot is these practices are great. I've got a lot of guys that get after each other. I can't wait till I have my whole roster ready to go in a game. So look for that Mississippi depth to be too much for Lafayette tonight. Let's take the Ole Miss Rebels minus the 13 over the Cajuns as the Vegas Sports Day play of the day.
And it ties it right back into Vegas because the UNLV Rebels, the Ole Miss Rebels, will go rebel to rebel. 13-point laying it with the Mississippi. Boy, that's a bad. Yeah, I'm ending the show. That's it. Good night, goodbye, good day. For Malinsky, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the games. We'll see you tomorrow.